The Vermont Conversation with David Goodman is brought to you by Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility and by Vermont Student Assistance Corporation, Green Mountain Power, Concept 2, Norwich Solar Technologies, The Alchemist Brewery, Let's Grow Kids, UVM Medical Center, and nearly 700 business members of Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility who believe that sustainable business practices value people, planet, and profit. Welcome back to the Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. We're continuing our conversation this week with former State Representative Kaya Morris from Bennington. Kaya Morris was the state representative from 2014 to September 2018 when she resigned her position in the wake of racist attacks from community members and an avowed neo-Nazi in Bennington. Kaya, that story continued forward until early this year when Attorney General T.J. Donovan traveled to Bennington to announce the results of his investigation into the case of the person who was harassing you. Take us to that press conference. It was in Temple Beth El in Bennington. What happened there?
It was a pretty packed room that day. I think a lot of people had interest in wanting to be there. And one of the things that I remember most about that moment was looking across the room and seeing that on one half of the room were people of color, many friends, many women that I knew that had been trying to be supportive and understanding and wrap their heads around what was happening. The other half of the room was mostly white. And as the Attorney General announced that they weren't going to do anything, seeing people of color openly weep at that announcement, there's an understanding and a solidarity and a resonance in the fact of them seeing themselves in my story and vice versa. And if I could not get justice, what hope do they have? Knowing that we are seen as, and especially women of color, are seen as the least human and are seen as our lives mattering the least within a culture of white supremacy and patriarchy, knowing fully that nothing would be done and that we are supposed to just swallow the violence and the hate that happens around us because our state is incapable of protecting us. That was really, really heavy for me to see. And knowing the implications, the broader implications for what it would unleash and what it has shown with the rise of hate crimes that are happening here in the state and the more open and brazen acts that have been taking place in our schools, in our workplaces, without abatement. It created an open season on our lives, is what I feel. And that was a powerful thing that I carried with me even into that space, into Central America, and seeing these women of color, and saying that I feel you and I see you and I know that fear of, is somebody actually going to do anything? Because history has shown that it will not.
What hope or counsel can you give, and did you give, the women in Central America and people in Vermont who just felt a sense of despair at the targeting that occurred to you and your family?
That we're going to keep fighting on. We have no choice but to keep fighting on. And that there is more we can do when we build solidarity than if we go at these battles alone. In the months since that press conference, leaders of color have come together in unity in ways that we've never seen before in this state. There's actions that are happening here in Vermont that are moving at an exponential rate. And much of it is because of these moments, that recognition that we have to do this work because no one else is going to do it for us, in this slow, methodical, plodding, safe approach to dealing with a rampant cancer on our society, the soul, the stain on our soul of our state. We can't gingerly go into a solution around that. We have to do so with boldness, and that happens within numbers. So it's important to speak up and to build the muscle memory of how to speak up against these injustices, how to recognize them when you are within scenarios, how to contact the people who do hold power and the ability to make decisions so that they know that these things are important and they matter to you. Our delegation has always been on the front lines of this work, and Vermonters have always been on the front lines of this work. We are leaders in the nation, and the world does watch to see what Vermont does. And, of course, accordingly, so Senator Leahy has a fantastic bill. It's the Refugee Protection Act, and it's a really comprehensive bill that he's introduced just last week that will help to do a comprehensive overhaul of our immigration system and policies and looking at what that means for the definition of who is granted asylum. I want to tell another quick story, if I may, that I think is important. One of the workers talked to us about a woman, a young woman, she's 19, who has tried to cross the border 4 times. She will not be able to do so anymore because her most recent story is the most devastating of all. So on her last attempt to try to come to the border to escape the physical violence that she's dealing with every day because she was being raped on a regular basis, she escaped and tried to get on what's called the Beast, La Bestia. And it's a train that runs. It's a high-speed train, and people try to join onto the train. They try to literally hop onto the train to be able to get passage and get closer to the border of the United States. It's an incredibly dangerous, dangerous act, and clearly an act of desperation. And this young woman went to go and rendezvous with the Beast to escape the sexual assault that she had experienced, being raped 5 times, and was assaulted right there by random men. And we know that rapes are happening as well within our detention centers and within these camps where people are forced to stay on the other side of the border instead of being processed here in the United States. But this was huge for her to get raped again right before she got onto the Beast. And she was unsuccessful in getting on the Beast, and her legs were amputated in trying to board the Beast. And even within that, it is the sexual assaults and the fact that the lack of her humanity even being recognized as having importance is what's hurting her soul the most right now. And so if we're going to talk about how we're going to fix this, we have to fix this from the root causes. And so it is around completely redoing the way that we approach immigration policy. But then there's also a really important bill, too. It's H.R. 3524 that all of our delegation are in support of as well. But they need to hear from you on this because it is a partisan bill as of right now, as people are fearing elections, and they need to understand, regardless of party affiliation, that human rights are not negotiable by party dictates. And so it's seeking to really go comprehensively combating the corruption, really strengthening the rule of law and consolidating democratic governance, because right now it's individuals that are running these shows instead of an actual government, a government that's functioning in the ways that it should be with a true democracy, really tackling the issues of extreme poverty that are forcing people to flee and funding these organizations like the ones that we saw that are on the ground and are actually doing work that has meaning, that is actually resonant. And they need support on that. And so USAID is a huge piece of that, and that constantly gets cut. But that's how we're able to help support people on the local level and avoid the systems of corruption that might divert those funds. So we need Vermonters to get really into understanding this work and to dive in so that we can both fix things here at home and fix them abroad.
And on that note of fixing things here, what do you feel is the most effective and powerful ways for Vermonters to work on issues of racism here in Vermont that will make a meaningful difference in the lives of people of color, of people who are vulnerable and marginalized in any number of ways?
Well, so I appreciate you asking that, because it is, when we're thinking about inequality and we're thinking about bias, when we're thinking about the rise of hate, it is multifaceted. It's not just around race, right? But race is at the baseline of all of this. This country was founded on genocide of Native Americans. So it's been a fundamental component of everything that we do. So we need to learn and become very educated and well-versed in understanding what issues of equity actually look like. Some of these people that are in these caravans are disabled. And they are dying because they don't have access to the medication and the medical supports they need. We have trans women and men that are trying to escape the physical violence that are within these groups, and children that are going by themselves because they, for a multitude of reasons, and it's not that their parents are sending them away, but there's multiple ways that these stories are told. So seeing and understanding that these issues are not just around the racism, but that they impact these individuals so much more. So as a Latino person who might be trans, as a Latino person or Latinx individual who might be disabled or have a, live with a disability, their experience is that much more harrowing than if we were to just isolate any parts of their identity. So it's around us as a state getting really, really competent very quickly and understanding that lives are on the line with this.
You mentioned earlier in the show about the bill that you've been involved in, the ethnic studies bill. Talk about some of the other work you've been involved in since you were in the legislature, or not just bills, but other work.
So I have my own consulting entity that I provide consultations on diversity, equity, and inclusion for nonprofits and businesses. So really helping them to look at ways that they can systemically change. While we want to see ourselves as, okay, we're still this all-white state, the new census numbers will show that's not the case anymore. But even as that is the case, who's being pushed in or out of our workforces? So asking and being a part of those really important questions. Working with our local school systems, even down in the Bennington area and different parts of the state, to try and help change within our school systems, because, again, as we're thinking about what ethnic and social equity means for Vermont, it's multifaceted, and those that are on the margins need to be in the center of all of these conversations. So empowering those voices to be a part of that, and working with our different supervisory unions and their school administrations on finding mechanisms for doing that kind of really great work.
What gives you hope?
That people are still fighting. We're still in this. I feel like folks haven't given up. They're waiting to be asked. They're looking for the opportunity to be asked to get involved. We're all feeling and seeing that pain right now. It's acute for many of us, some more than others. But knowing that people are ready, they're ready to do what's necessary to try and really reclaim what we believe is our true values.
You have written about how you stand on the shoulders of those who've come before you, and you've written about your great-grandfather, J.R. Bud Cole. Mm. Tell us about him.
So my great-grandparents were, their church was part of the Freedom Schools movement that happened during the Civil Rights era, where different locations, mostly churches, would create actual schools to educate African-American youth, literal education, your basic education components, but also learning ways of nonviolent resistance to be a part of the Civil Rights movement. And so their church had made the decision to become a Freedom School. And as a result of that, there were some workers that had come down to visit and try to help support that work. And members of their community, there were elected officials, there were law enforcement, total complicity. They came as a mob and surrounded the church after a normal Sunday business meeting and assaulted everyone, beat my great-grandfather almost to the point of death. And many feel that it was because of the prayers of my grandmother, great-grandmother, just begging for forgiveness and asking God for help, that the beating stopped. And then they beat elderly, they beat the youth. It didn't matter who was there. And then after they stopped the beatings, they burned the church to the ground. So the there were three civil rights workers who then came to try to learn more about this. Schroener, Goodman, and Cheney. And they came down to Philadelphia, Mississippi to do some initial work to find out what had happened with the beatings and the burnings. And they were then surrounded and murdered. And their bodies were dumped in the water. And some know the story from the movie Mississippi Burning. Some of the orchestrators of that crime have been brought to justice, but that community has never healed from that work. And so knowing that my great-grandparents did so much, it's interesting because you don't see yourself as a part of history in that way. It's just your family. It's your family stories. But recognizing what great risk they took. What great risk they took. My great-grandfather was not able to work on his 300-acre farm and had to let much of it go fallow because of the injuries he sustained from that beating and the inability to get health care from Mississippi hospitals who didn't want to help support a black male. And what all that looks and feels like to the implications of where we are today. So to know that they were on the front lines of trying to fight for the human dignity of people of color, and here we are still fighting these battles and still have the violence on our doorsteps. That's pretty chilling.
You wrote in an op-ed earlier this year, and I quote, "It unfortunately needs to be said, I am not the cause of racism in our state. Our local, regional, and state economic challenges cannot be laid at my feet. It is not on me to make everyone whole again, nor is it my burden to help us all heal from this moment. This is your work today." Why did you feel the need to say, it's not your fault?
It's been incredibly easy. It's a very, very lazy trope that's being reiterated on a daily basis, on the internet. It's because of the fact that I spoke up, that I brought all of this racism, that I am the cause of the racism, and that I am actually the racist that is doing acts against white Vermonters, that I am the one that's pushing all of this change when the change is happening on its own. It's all being laid at my feet, and it's part of a complete campaign. It's a smear campaign, and it's a campaign that's meant to create an increased danger for my life. It's very easy for someone to say that when we know that it is completely untrue. Racism has been here since the slaughter of the Abenaki here in this state. It began in that moment. It did not begin when I came to live and call Vermont my home. The economic challenges that we're having around tourism or around businesses that are struggling, this is Vermont's challenge. If you want to change the image of the state because of this visibility and the recognition of the fact that this is happening, you have two choices. You can either deny it and stick your head in the sand and point fingers at another individual, or you can say, let's dive in and do the work. Let's show how much we aren't aligned with those values, with those thoughts, those sentiments. We are openly and working diligently to make it right. Those are the choices you have. And for many, it was a greater desire to whitewash everything that had happened, to say, there's no racism here. Our law enforcement has no issues with racism. And while there are a few individuals, our state is great. Our state is great. And that's why we're here fighting for it. That's why people are rising up and they are trying to fight this hatred that's happening, because we love this state. It is not because we hate this state, but it is because we love this state that much. And we know that we have the capacity to do better. So we must. And it is a we. It is not a me. It is not Kaya asking everybody in the world to do this work. It is you asking your neighbor. It is you talking to your relatives. It is you asking your school board. It is you going to your elected officials, your town officials, and holding them accountable. It is we. It is a we that can fix this, not a me.
Your story received national attention. It was covered in the Washington Post, the New York Times. The fact that, you know, Vermont's lone African-American female state legislator was essentially driven out by racism. It's now a year and a half since you left the legislature. How do you reflect on your journey since that time?
Well, you know, I think it's really interesting because while on some levels I felt driven, on the other stance, as far as leaving my position within the legislature, that was a decision. That was a choice. It was a choice. It was not the desired choice for anyone, but it was a decision to take my life back because I realized that there was the safety that I needed was not going to be available to me. That the assurances that justice would be met with and that we would be made whole were unavailable. And so it was a deliberate decision to take my life back and to be there and be present for my family and to be there and to be in a space where I could begin healing and speaking more with greater strength around the necessity for the changes that needed to happen. In those months since then, it still is. It's an international story. It's an international story, and it's an international story because there's a resonance to it that you can find everywhere. I'm actually the subject of a documentary that is due to come out in early 2020, where I'm one of five women in the world that is being, their stories are being highlighted about misogyny online, what that looks and feels like. And in essentially, I am the embodiment of the worst case scenario of what happens with all of that. When it comes into the real world, it steps off of just the world of online trolling and it steps into the real world. What does that look and feel like? And what are the implications for us as a society when that's able to happen? And so, so for me, the months since then have been an opportunity for me to begin some measures of healing, to look more carefully and critically at the entirety of what's happened, going through the process. We're fortunate we have a Human Rights Commission here in Vermont that can be an independent body that can do the deep dives and the investigative work that the rest of our state is incapable or in some cases unwilling to do, so that we can find out the true answers of why this went the way it did, where things went so wrong. And the results are not there. The results are things that we all need to see and hear.
Many people in your situation with what you've endured would probably be sorely tempted to just pack up and leave, go to a place that was not as hostile, that didn't have this history and baggage. Why do you fight?
I fight because I do love Vermont and I do believe in Vermont and I don't believe my work in Vermont is anywhere close to being done. This was where my son was born here. This is his home. I wanted him to have the beauty of Vermont. I wanted him to have the green of Vermont. I wanted him to have access to so many of the wonderful things that Vermont has. That is why I chose to raise my son here. And I'm still dedicated to that. So while I'm dealing with my own measures of forced migration, we will not be able to call Bennington our home that much longer. Because there's work that needs to be done in other places. And we will go to go do that work and to help continue to raise that voice while Bennington finds its way to find its own resilience and its own strength and its own fight.
What will you need to see in the world, in Vermont or in the world at large, that will let you know you've had an impact, that you've changed the injustice that you've encountered?
It's already happening. It's already happening all over the state in many, many places. I get letters of encouragement from people throughout the state, from community groups that are having reading and book groups to try to dive in and talk about these issues, looking at the numbers of organizations that are now taking seriously what does it mean to do anti-bias training? What does it mean to do anti-racist work? Seeing the changes even within the legislature that they're doing there, how they're functioning, aspects of the state, you know, within our state government all the way up to the administration. There's change that's already happened, and it's going to continue to grow. And so I don't know that there's still a touch point where I'll say, okay, now I feel like we're getting somewhere, because the groundswell's just beginning. So I believe that we do have much to celebrate. We have much to be critical of, but we also have much to celebrate.
I began by noting that when you left the legislature, it was not the end of the Kaya Morris story. Mm-hmm. What do you want the Kaya Morris story to be known for?
I think what it already is known for, that there is an incredible, there are incredible people in the world who are doing work that comes from their heart and are really out there and dedicated to make a difference and are hoping and seeking to continue to inspire others to do the same.
Well, Kaya Morris, I want to thank you for joining us on the Vermont Conversation and for your fight.
Thank you very much, David.
The Vermont Conversation with David Goodman. This special feature from Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility is underwritten in part by Vermont Student Assistance Corporation. VSAC helps students of all ages save, plan, and pay for college and career training with education and career planning services, need-based grants, scholarships, low-cost education loans, and Vermont's official 529 college savings plan. Norwich Solar Technologies, providing complete clean energy services to Vermont schools, towns, nonprofits, and businesses. Green Mountain Power, delivering clean, cost-effective, and highly reliable power to customers and offering cutting-edge products and services to reduce costs and carbon. The Alchemist Brewery of Waterbury and Stowe, proud B Corp, using the power of business to support a clean environment and economic opportunity for all. UVM Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, the heart and science of medicine. Let's Grow Kids, a statewide campaign about the need for more high-quality, affordable child care in Vermont to better support our children, families, communities, and economy. Concept 2, designers and manufacturers of Concept 2 rowing oars, indoor rower, ski erg, and bike erg, and proud to support nonprofit groups such as the Green Mountain Club. And nearly 700 business members of Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility who believe that sustainable business practices value people, planet, and profit.